You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasuthi. Happy Valentine's Day. Now, the rules of attraction for the human species are still not clearly understood. How it all factors into true love is even more mysterious, actually. But a short list of scientific rules for the game of love seems to be emerging. Some clearly defined rules, but the others, not so. And this Valentine's Day, Assistant Professor of Psychology, Dr. Ian Stephen, is here to talk to us about what makes people attracted to each other. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ian.
Hi.
Now, what do men and women really want when they set out in a relationship?
Well, if we're kind of thinking about relationships and attraction in the scientific way that we think about them and in a psychological way, then the answer is lots of things. Men and women are both interested in a whole range of different things when they are looking for a relationship. So that can be looks or money or security or someone to raise a family with. And generally, I would say all of these are important. Traditionally, people say that men are looking for looks and women are looking for money, perhaps. And there is something in that, which again kind of goes back to our biology. It goes back at a very basic biological level. Men can have any number of children at the same time. So any man produces in one day enough sperm to make every woman on the whole of the planet Earth pregnant, whereas any woman can only be pregnant with one child at a time. Mm-hmm. So this can lead to things whereby basically it's more important for a woman to really invest in a child. A man's initial investment is very low, and then he can just walk away without having lost much. Mm-hmm. Whereas a woman, if she gets pregnant, then her investment is at least 9 months of pregnancy and a lot of energy. And then you've got that big investment and you still have to invest for another probably 18 years. So this makes women looking for a man who's less likely to run away important, whereas a man might be more interested in things like looks, which we think indicate things like fertility and health in both women and men, but mm-hmm. particularly in women.
I've always wondered, are we made to be monogamous?
That depends what you mean by made to be monogamous. I think in a lot of societies, monogamy is the ideal. But even in humans, monogamy is not universal. In the West, where I come from, you're kind of expected to marry someone and settle down, but that will often not be the first person you meet. And will often, with marriage breakdown or with infidelity, will often not be the last person you meet either. In lots of other cultures, people are allowed to marry more than one. Usually that's a man marrying more than one woman, like I believe is the case in Islam. A man can have up to four wives.
Yes.
There are some cultures where a woman can have more than one husband. So are we made to be monogamous? In some cultures, but not in all.
Okay, all right. Can you tell if you fancy someone after 3 minutes of meeting them?
Sort of. I think you can certainly tell whether someone is attractive very quickly. So when you look at someone's face in particular or a person as a whole, including their body, you can tell all kinds of things about them. So straight away you can see roughly how old they are, whether they're male or female. We think you can tell roughly how healthy they are. You can tell what ethnic group they belong to, and also you can tell how attractive they are. Now this is quite a kind of superficial definition of attraction. You can see that person's a very beautiful person, but it doesn't tell you how beautiful their mind is.
It's not long enough.
So I think you can tell if you fancy someone probably a lot quicker than 3 minutes, but I don't think you can tell that you love someone that quickly. So,
So what makes a man more attractive to a woman?
There are lots and lots of different things that make people in general more attractive. Male attractiveness is actually a bit more complicated than female attractiveness. So for both men and women, there are some very simple things like people with more symmetrical faces tend to be thought of as more attractive. People who look like... Now, I know it sounds funny, but average-looking people are actually more attractive. So people, this is not average as in kind of plain. This is average as in if you take all the people around you and you make an average of all of those faces, then that face will be an attractive face. It's not the most attractive face you can get, but we think that this is basically to do with the way that your brain represents faces. So in your mind, we think you hold this kind of what we call a prototype of the most attractive of a face, and then someone that looks like that face, you'll feel familiar towards them. You'll think they're more attractive.
And do we all have that requirement in our minds without us knowing it?
Everyone in their mind has a representation of what a face is. Everyone can tell, apart from kind of a few people who have certain forms of brain damage or something, but generally everyone can tell how attractive people are very quickly, and this will relate to things like how masculine or feminine they are, how symmetrical they are, and in particular how healthy they look.
Okay, you mentioned just now what makes a man more attractive is a little bit more complicated. Why?
If the question was what makes a woman more attractive, then the answer is really quite simple. It is signs of fertility, so it's signs that she's of childbearing age, signs that she is healthy, and signs that she's feminine, so she has kind of lots of female sex hormones which make you fertile. For a man, so for women, femininity is very important. For men, masculinity is sometimes important, and sometimes it's important to be masculine, and sometimes it's important to not be masculine. Now, there are various reasons behind this. We think that masculinity indicates how much testosterone you've got, so how strong you are, how possibly how fertile a man is, and can indicate things like how good they might be at defending a woman against attackers, for example. But on the other hand, men with more testosterone have a number of kind of negative traits as well. So men who have high levels of testosterone are more likely to commit violent crime, more likely to get into fights, they're more likely to cheat on their spouses. So all of these things are kind of revealed in the face in terms of masculinity as well. So should a woman prefer masculinity or not? In a way, that depends on how on the particular needs of that particular woman. So for example, if you live in a very dangerous society with lots of violence, then it can be good to have a masculine husband who can protect you against all these potential muggers and potential rapists and all these people who might be trying to hurt you. If you live in a very safe society, maybe that's not quite so good, and all that having a big, strong, masculine man will get you is your husband sent to jail or beaten up in the home, neither of which is a good thing. Mm-hmm.
So does that explain why some women have this attraction to men who are, you know, murderers, for an example, or those who, you know, get involved in gang fights and stuff like that? It's the masculinity that's attracting them to that man.
Potentially, yeah. I mean,
which happens to be a downside.
Well, it's an upside in terms of perhaps fertility, and we think possibly in terms of genes as well. So if you have really good genes, then you can cope with having a lot of testosterone, develop big muscles and a big masculine face. And so this perhaps reflects on how good your genes are. So there are upsides to having a masculine partner.
Okay.
But on the other hand, then yes, there are these downsides as well.
Right. Besides masculinity, what are some of the other things a woman looks at?
Well, we already mentioned money.
That explains the women interested in men with big cars.
Yes, it does.
sporty cars.
Yeah, so we can see kind of parallels coming up between humans and other animals. Now, in non-human animals, you would see, for example, the peacock has a great big tail with lots of brightly coloured eyes on it. Now, that tail's not actually much use to the peacock for any purpose other than attracting lady peacocks. In fact, it makes it more difficult for the peacock to fly. It makes them more visible to predators, so they're more likely to get caught and eaten. So what we think is happening in peacocks is they're saying, look, I'm so good at being a peacock that it doesn't matter. I can cope with having this great big tail and I can show it off, and I'm still better than all the other peacocks despite having this great big handicapping tail on me. Now, a similar kind of thing is happening with cars. What does a Ferrari do that Canchil doesn't? Mm-hmm. Not much. It goes faster, mm-hmm. certainly. It makes more noise.
Yes, what a nuisance.
It's very, very expensive to buy. And that's the kicker there, is that basically if you buy a big red Ferrari, you're saying, look at me, I've got so much money and I'm so successful that I can waste all this money on a Ferrari when a Canchil would do the job just as well. So you're trying to attract women by using that kind of advertising campaign, basically.
Okay, coming up, we'll go beyond that red Ferrari and we'll explore smell, or what we call pheromones, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasodhi. We're talking about what makes people attracted to each other with Dr. Ian Stephen, an assistant professor of psychology. If you have a question for him, don't hesitate. Text us on 016-201-9000. Now, Dr. Ian, research reported recently says that both smell and look make a woman or man more attractive at certain times of the month. Are we talking about pheromones here?
Yes, we probably are. And actually, in this case, we're talking specifically about women. So women are more fertile at certain times of the month than at other times. Now, what this means is that if a man and a woman have relations at one time of the month and then, or at a different time of the month, there's a different chance of whether that will result in a child, which in evolutionary terms is thought of as a kind of an evolutionary success. So what this means is that there's an advantage to being able to tell in some way when a woman is ovulating and when a woman is fertile. Now, in animals again, so this can be very, very obvious. Chimpanzees, their backsides swell up really big and they go pink and they start soliciting the attentions of every male in the group. Women are not that obvious, mm-hmm. but there are still kind of certain things that change across the month. We mentioned earlier that more symmetrical faces look more attractive. Now, women actually become more symmetrical around the time when they're ovulating, and this allows, and men who can pick up on this kind of signal can potentially have more evolutionary success, i.e. are more likely to have offspring result from this. When we come to pheromones, yeah, it does seem like women smell more attractive when they're ovulating as well. But there's kind of a debate about whether pheromones are really important. In certain animals, they're very, very, very important. Moths, for example, you can release some of the lady moth's pheromone into the put it on a bit of rag and put it outside, and in the morning you'll have hundreds of male moths from miles away who have come to find that female moth and to presumably being quite disappointed. But in humans, some people can smell them and some can't. Now, we don't know whether the people who can't consciously smell them, it's possible that they're still subconsciously smelling those pheromones and it's still affecting how attractive they find a person, but we don't know that for certain. So maybe pheromones are important and maybe they're not.
So how do you explain how opposites attract?
Well, this depends on what you mean by opposites. So one way of interpreting that is that when two people have a child together, their genes, the man contributes 50% of the genes to the child and the woman contributes the other 50% of the genes to the child. Now, if those genes are too similar, then it results in all kinds of birth defects and diseases. So you want to avoid being that closely related and that similar to people. But you also don't want to be too different to the person that's the object of your desires. Because if, for example, you're attracted to someone that's not really a person, then that's not going to be very useful. So the kind of the opposites attract thing is basically you're trying to find someone who's similar enough to you to be the right age, they need to be the right sex, they need to be obviously the right species. But once you've got those things, then it's actually quite an advantage to have very different genes to each other, because it means that your children are at much lower risk of birth defects. They're at much lower risks of all kinds of diseases. We think they're also more likely to be more attractive, which again is an advantage to them when they grow up and they're looking for a husband or a wife.
Okay, so what you're saying is if you and your partner are genetically similar, you won't be as happy as you should be.
What I'm saying is don't marry your brother or sister, essentially. And there are all kinds of birth defects and genetic problems that you can get from that.
There's a growing number of growing attraction between younger men and older women. How do you explain that?
So, when you say a growing trend of this, it's still very unusual, and it's still the woman is never very old, if you see what I mean. So, you might get a 20-year-old man attracted to a 35-year-old or a 45-year-old woman, but you will almost certainly never get a 20-year-old man attracted to a 75-year-old woman. Now, this is for a couple of reasons. I mean, when we marry, we like to think it's for life, but that's not always the case. Now, if you're marrying for childbearing reasons, which kind of at root is what people tend to do, then if as long as someone is still of childbearing age, it's not a disaster. If someone's 75 and you don't have any children and you marry a 75-year-old woman, you're effectively throwing yourself on the evolutionary scrap heap because you're never going to have children. But if that woman is 35, then she could still.
So the bottom line is it has to do with the woman's reproductive age.
Essentially.
That's the crux of the whole, what makes people attracted to each other.
Yeah, so, I mean, age is very important in attraction, and this is for a whole variety of different reasons. And people tend to be attracted to people who are about the same age as them. And normally the woman is slightly younger than the man if it's going to be one way or the other. This is partly because it's going to be, you're likely to have more in common personality wise and interests wise. So it's all very well having kind of a brief relationship with someone that you don't really like very much. But if you're looking kind of more long term, perhaps, as we probably should be seeing as it's Valentine's Day, then that's not very. It's unlikely to produce a very good relationship if you already don't like each other or if you already have nothing to talk about.
Okay. So how does love fall into all of this?
Well, I mean, you can think of love in all kinds of different ways, and traditionally we tend to sort of think of it in the way that singers and poets and things describe it. But being scientists, we have to kind of reduce everything to more kind of concrete things. So, love would. Seems to be based on a couple of hormones that are released in the brain, in particular one called oxytocin. And you can see the action of oxytocin very, very nicely in two different species of vole. Now, vole are kind of like little mice. And there are two species that are very, very similar to each other. The main difference is that one of them has lots of oxytocin and lots of oxytocin receptors in the brain. And when they mate with each other for the first time, loads of oxytocin gets released and is all absorbed by the brain, and they form lifetime monogamous bonds. And I think as far as we know, they don't have infidelity like humans do, and they will kind of not form a new pair if the first one dies. Mm-hmm. The other species of vole has much less oxytocin and much fewer receptors in the brain. And when they mate, less oxytocin is released and absorbed by the brain, and really they don't stick around. They mate and then they go their separate ways.
So what are you saying, that we're all lacking oxytocin in a big way?
No. I mean, different people have different levels of oxytocin. Yes. And different numbers.
How do we make sure we have receptors? Enough of it?
Get a lot of love, I think. I mean, oxytocin is kind of, is released by the brain, and it's rewarding, and it feels good, and it's released by things like sex, obviously, kissing, cuddling, also kind of having really good sort of intimate conversations with people that you love, and when these things keep happening with the same person over time, you start to associate that person, and you start to associate even their face or the sound of their voices with this oxytocin release. So in a scientific way, that's kind of one of the main candidates for what causes love, and for perhaps what love is on some kind of chemical basis.
And the secret to long-term relationships.
Okay,
which of all of these motivations really, really drive us, would you say?
I think it all depends what you're looking for. I think if you're out on a Friday night and you're looking for a bit of fun, then perhaps looks and humour and things like this are more important. But I think the kind of, in terms of a long-term relationship, then obviously personality and kind of interests become more important, and this kind of development of the relationship over time.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Ian Stephen, an assistant professor of psychology, talking to us about what makes people attracted to each other. Happy Valentine's Day. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.